I want to just say how good it is to see all of you. I thought gathering at church was something automatic and something that is so, you know, something that's taken for granted. But what a blessing it is to see all of you. And Lord is here and He has a real message for you today. And the message is this: He begins and He completes. What He has begun, He always completes. And I don't know whether that means anything to you, but we make promises, parents make promises, company makes promises, the leaders of the nation make promises, but they may do their best, but sometimes they can't finish, and a lot of times they don't finish it. But God always completes what He started. Why is that important? Because in a time like this, and I think as we are looking at John chapter 9, He begins a good work upon this blind beggar. It's mainly about one person, isn't it? If you think about it, if you look at entire chapter, which is made up of 41 verses, and there are groups of people that show up, but it really is about one blind beggar. Would you think with me, okay, if someone of that kind of status walk into this church, how would you respond? Very insignificant person, uneducated, probably not dressed as well as you are, and just walk into this place, we wouldn't think much of that person, the chances. But isn't it amazing? That's the person that kind of shines in this entire chapter of chapter 9 of John's Gospel. And I want to begin with the title, We Also Blind. Are you blind? If you're not, what do you see? I mean, that really is the question, isn't it? No, I'm not blind. I'm fine. I have 20/20 vision. Then what do you see? What are you supposed to see? And that really is kind of like the theme of this chapter 9. And John's gospel only has 7 miracles out of literally thousands, at least 60 or 70 in other gospels. But John carefully selects only 7. So we call that not miracles, but miraculous signs, which means it has a much greater meaning or something that it is pointing toward to. So number 6 is about restoring the sight of a man who was born blind. And we've been talking about this for the last 2 weeks. And we explained that. This is something never happened in the Old Testament. Never since the creation of the world, I have heard that a man born blind received his sight. What is that supposed to be about? It is about you becoming a Christian. It really is, actually. We're looking at verse 35 to 41, and we see this encounter between one person and Jesus. It really is about that. And what we see is what he started in the very beginning of the chapter, Jesus kind of completes it. This man was a blind beggar, someone who was expelled from the society, from the church, even from family. Someone who was abandoned and cursed. And we finish in last week, up to verse 34, he was expelled from the church, kind of ignored by the parents, one more time. So he's separated from everybody and he's all alone. Can I ask you, any of you feel like that? You feel like you're all alone, separated from God, separated from your parents, separated from everyone else. Perhaps you are even separated from yourself. You cannot understand yourself. You cannot forgive yourself. You're just kind of like, I don't know, how did I end up here? And I know there are people like that. There is always people like that. And here is a man who was never educated, never went to church, and abandoned and expelled by people not only once but twice. Okay. That's what we see. But that's the person Jesus singles out and shows up and show grace twice. Isn't that what this story is about? If you look at verse 1, it is Jesus, it's God, initiating the entire relationship. And then he heals him, and then a whole bunch of things happens in between, and he gets expelled, and he's all alone again. And to him, Jesus shows up one more time, and he completes it. And this is the closure that you need to experience. If not, I don't know. I don't know where you stand, but if not, that's not a Christian story. Okay. So let me begin with that, and I want to begin with 2 Corinthians 4:3, and I think it kind of summarizes chapter 9 and summarizes Christianity. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 3 says, even if our gospel is veiled, gospel, you hear it, but you don't hear it. And you see it, but you don't really see it. It is veiled. And to whom it is veiled? It is veiled to those who are perishing. I'll let you just pause for a second. To those who are perishing, to those who are doomed, it is veiled. You hear it, but you don't respond. You see it, but you don't see anything. Why is that? It is because, in their case, God of this world, it is a small God, but it is some sort of spiritual being, God of this age, blinded the minds of the unbelievers. That kind of explains what gospel is veiled means. And the consequence and the end result is you're perishing. To keep them from seeing what? The light of the gospel of the glory of Christ. Light shines and your eyes are opened. Sounds like John chapter 9, doesn't it? Sounds like Acts chapter 9, where Saul becomes Paul. Saul was blind, completely blind, and he sees. So light of the gospel and the glory of Christ, which is the image of God. Now, the second category, the God, for God, who said, let there be light. And there was a light in the darkness. The Creator, God, had shine upon your heart. Do you have the light in your heart? Seriously, I'm asking this question. I think it's very timely as well. Time like this, you wonder, where is this world going? What am I going to hear tomorrow? Will there be school? Will there be a stock market? You know, we have all these questions, but do you have Jesus in your heart? Did he shine upon your heart? I could tell you how you could answer that. If you have met him, you will be able to say, I was blind, but now I see. If you don't, you can't say it. Okay, I just want to give you that as a kind of as a guideline. So God shone in our hearts, give the light and the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. I want to just begin with this. Either you are completely veiled and blind and heading toward perishing, or he has shone light upon your heart, which is completely God-initiated grace, and you respond, and I don't think it's a questionable thing. You see it, you see it. If you don't see it, you don't see it. I mean, I've been explaining for a couple of weeks already. This is our third week. Bible uses two metaphors, and there are more, but two metaphors that kind of explains what happens when you become a Christian. One is blind become someone who sees. Very drastic, if you think about it. Complete darkness to complete different world. I don't think that's a questionable thing. And second metaphor that we see in the Bible, which we will hopefully, Lord willing, in a few months, you know, we'll be able to hear is, you are dead and you become alive, like Lazarus, from death to life. So none of them are very questionable expressions. And we saw last week, when God is at work, you always respond. You are responding right now. Okay, it's hard for me to tell how you're responding, but you're responding right now. God is reigning. God is leading this history, and we are responding. We are all responding. And two options is you respond as if there is no God. Okay, and then you act as if there is God. Simple as that. And we talked about in John chapter 9, there are three groups of people who responded to this incredible miracle and the work of God opening the eyes of a man who was born blind. Something that never happened. And he opened his eyes and people responded. The first group of people was the neighbor, someone who saw him every single day. There are people that you see every single day, don't you? Like your family members or your coworkers or your, I don't know, you know, your neighbors. And you saw him for like months and years. And his eyes were opened and you can't tell. You're confused. And that's amazingly, that's how these people, first group of people called neighbors, who saw this man at the temple gate begging for all these years. Is that him? It looks like him. No, oh, maybe not. And and the man says, no, I am he. I am he. And they are still confused, responding to the work of God. Confused. You have no stance. Second group of people, we saw the Pharisees. And I want to clarify something because I heard a question. This does not refer to ethnic Jews. But these are the religious establishment and the religious spirit of that time. It has nothing to do with ethnic group of Jewish people. God loves Jewish people. It's the spirit of this religiosity, of opposing God, opposing Christ, that was the problem. And these leaders, and this miracle happened on the day of Sabbath, and they just made a conclusion. Their heart is already shut down. He is a sinner. He's not from God. We don't need to listen to him. He violated Sabbath, therefore he's not of God. There are people who already closed their hearts, and you have no desire to hear anything. It's very illogical, irrational, just so closed off. And what do they do? They call the parents. So the third group of people who respond to this work of God was the parents. Now, I'm a parent. Some of your parents. Let's say, can you imagine your family member with that kind of infirmity all his life? You as a parent, and by miraculous power of God, presence of God, his eyes were opened, and you see the parents kind of like copping out, being fearful and, I don't know, he's old enough, ask him, kind of thing. I don't want to be expelled from the church. I don't want to be cursed. Ask him. So that's the kind of response we see. And the last person that we see the response to the work of God is this blind beggar. One person, very insignificant person. And we see him, amazingly, he is bold and he is pretty logical and is opposing the religious leaders. And he basically says, I was blind, but now I see. Do you mean to say that man is not from God and he opened my eyes? That does not make sense. Since from the beginning and the creation, no one heard that eyes were opened and he opened my eyes and you're saying that he's not from God. He is from God. You see him testifying logically, pretty boldly. And it's pretty amazing if you think about it. This man who never went to church, never went to school, but he experienced great power of God. And somehow faith is rising. You see that, right? Or else how would he go to, why would he go to Siloam and wash his eyes? And his faith is growing. No, the man Jesus, to a prophet, to finally he says, no, he's definitely from God. His faith is not static, it's growing. So what's happening in your heart? I know it is happening to some of your heart. And that's why I believe that you are here and worshiping the Lord. But still, it did not come to the closure. Today, we're going to look at the closure. Do you notice this man experienced incredible power of God? Do you notice this man even testified Christ? Do you notice he even was persecuted because of Christ, but still not come to the fruition of having saving faith? Because he didn't know Jesus. Do you see that? So we're going to look at, finally, Jesus, the light of the world, shine upon your heart, and your eyes will be open. Otherwise, think about it, people. This is the word of the truth. You are veiled from the gospel because God of this age. Your eyes are veiled. What do I supposed to see if my eyes are open? What do I supposed to, what difference should it make? So, Jesus heard that they had cast him out. So he was excommunicated, abandoned, cursed. Once again, he's an outcast, and he's all alone. Maybe like some of you are feeling right now. Jesus heard that he was cast him out, and Jesus went and found him. It sounds like a very like a bland statement, but it is always God-initiated. Christianity is always God-initiated. It begins from the heart of God. It does not begin with you. We don't seek God. We don't want God. We refuse God. We rebel against God. Christianity always begins with the grace of God or initiation of God. And can you picture with me? It's between Jesus and one person. So sort of like Paul Park, Pastor Paul Park here and I, we're good friends, I think. Yeah. And I'm asking him, Paul, as your pastor, do you trust me? Come on. Okay, that was very reluctant. Yes. Can you imagine Jesus shows up to this man? Do you believe in the Son of Man? Do you trust me? You know, there are questions in the Bible that God and or Jesus ask. We talked about this many, many times, but do you think God asked a question because he's not really sure? Do you love me? Jesus asked Simon Peter, do you love me? Is that a question because Jesus wasn't really sure about Peter's state of heart? So he's asking, do you love me? I don't think that's what it is. What is he doing? I know I shared this before, but who would you ask that question to, do you love me? Would you ask that question to anybody, just grab anybody out there and just ask, do you love me? That's the craziest question. If you ever ask that question to anybody, if you have to, it's probably someone that you love with all of your heart. Do you love me? And Jesus comes along to this man. Do you trust me? Do you trust in the Son of Man? Do you trust? Do you believe in the Son of Man? It's that kind of question, isn't it? And you know what? This is the key question. This is the salvation question you need to answer. Do you believe in the Son of Man? Seriously, people. This is the salvation question. I mean, up to this point, he experienced, he testified, he was persecuted, and he stood on the side of Jesus, but still doesn't know who Jesus is. But Jesus comes to him, try to close the door now, to give a closure. Sort of like he plants a seed, sprout comes out, and it kind of grows as the light shines. Something has to shine in your heart. We see that in 2 Corinthians. It shines upon your heart, and it grows, And finally it germinates. Give birth. Give birth. That's Christianity, people. That's what we see in John chapter 9. And I do want to ask you, do you believe in the Son of Man? Okay. So, do you believe in the Son of Man? And look at this man's response. See, what kind of like tone do you get? Who is he, sir? So that I may believe in him. Who is he? Do you realize he has no one in this world right now? He's been expelled from the church. It's kind of like abandoned from his parents. And it's all by himself. Who is he? And his faith has been rising, growing, turbulent. Who is he so that I may believe in him? Sounds like he's ready to believe. I really do believe God prepares the hearts of the people to believe. I was thinking this week, and about 15 years ago, I think maybe it was longer, but I went to Russia for missions, and we went to college campus to share Christ and just talk to the students. And I remember, through a translator, because some reason, they don't speak English. I mean, when we went to Russia, it was very, very difficult. So I have this translator, who was a sister, and sharing Christ gospel to two people. Okay, could you just picture with me? So there's me who's sharing, and I was much younger, thinner, right? And then there is my translator, and then two students. And I share my best looking at them, you know, God. Man, Jesus, you know, whole bit. And I share about 20 minutes and translator. And it was very, very, because I have to do it through the translator, it's kind of hard. So I was just doing my best. And at the end, very skeptically, I asked them, would you like to believe in Jesus and receive Jesus? And they said, okay. And I was going to pray. And then these two students were looking at my translator, which I didn't look at her at all. And I looked at her, and she was just bawling. Wait a minute. We're sharing the gospel to them. But she was just broken, and she said, I want to believe. I remember that. This week, I was reminded of that. You know, God prepares the hearts. God prepares your heart. Who is he? So that I may believe. I have no one else. Everyone abandoned me. Everyone look at me as a subhuman. Who is he so that I may believe? Isn't that what you say? What you see? Who is he so that I may believe in him? And Jesus opens his eyes now, right here. I really believe it's right here. You have seen him. The person that who is speaking to you am he. And his eyes were. The light was shone upon his heart. He saw the Son of Man. The greatness. You know, Son of Man refers to messianic title. Deity. Someone who came to give you atonement. Do you remember in John chapter 3, verse 14, right before John 3:16, for God so loved the world? And Jesus was talking about, alluding to that Exodus story of the serpents. And he said, just like the serpent must be lifted up, Son of Man must be lifted up. Son of Man must be lifted up. In other words, this God-man must go to the cross. And I must be lifted up on the cross. So when you look at me, if you look at me, you will live. And light will shine upon this man, the blind beggar. Now, he's not blind physically, but still spiritually blind. And he said, I am he. I am the Messiah. I am the Son of Man. And his eyes were opened, seeing the glory of Christ, the greatness of Christ. How do you supposed to know that? How do you make that kind of case? Look at his response. And then he goes, Lord, I believe, and he prostrated himself and he worshiped. Why would he do that? Because he sees God. He sees God, and he sees deity. He sees the Son of Man, people. I want to ask you one more time. I'm going to continue to ask you. Do you believe in the Son of Man? Can you answer it? You don't have to answer it to me. But you do need to answer it to him. Do you believe in me? I mean, I asked Paul, Paul, you know, don't look at me like that. Yeah. Do you believe me as your pastor? I could ask that question. And only reason I would ever ask that question is because I care for Paul. Which I do, actually. I got your back. Yeah. Why would you even ask that question? Do you believe in the Son of Man? Do you love me? And you need to be able to answer the people. That's when God could open your spiritual eyes and you could see. Okay? Lord, I believe. Is Jesus the Lord of your life? That's what it means to be a Christian. Today we're talking about closure. We're talking about kind of like Jesus finishing it up, closing the door. Once you become a Christian, he is absolutely responsible and he promises that he will complete it. He who began the good work will carry it on till completion, until the day of our Lord Jesus Christ. That's Christian doctrine. That's Christian teaching. And that's what we are called to believe. But until you come to this point, you may be testifying. You may be on his side. You may be serving. But you still don't know who Jesus is. What's his name? Metropolitan Tabernacle Pastor? Huh? Spurgeon. Yeah, Spurgeon. Thank you. Someone said Spurgeon. Spurgeon shares a story of a pastor who weren't converted, but while he was preaching, he converts. Here's how the story goes. He shared about Christ, and he served Christ. He talked about Christ, and he always, you know, lived in the church atmosphere all these years. But one day, he was preaching to the congregation, and just like this man, he was preaching about how Jesus went to the cross and died for you, and something happened, and as he was preaching, like I'm doing right now, he was convinced of what he's preaching to himself, and he began to preach very, very with conviction, and he began to believe, and he was converted. And then someone in the audience says, oh, I think our pastor was converted. And then other people in the congregation, yeah, I think that's true. And then he goes, I think I have. The reason Spurgeon shared this story is because this man didn't even know Jesus, but he was on the side of Jesus. He was testifying Jesus, standing firm for Jesus, and even being persecuted for Jesus. And just being prepared to be converted. Bring that life and birth of germination. Has it happened to you? Or do you just get sleepy? Has it happened to you? Do you know? Do you believe in the Son of Man? I'm serious, people. You know, I don't like to say things like that, but last week I shared, I'm not even sure whether we will be able to meet this Sunday, and that feels like several months ago. Don't you feel like that? And then, you know, I'm not even talking about next Sunday. We're kind of in a time in history where we don't even know what we're going to hear tomorrow, actually. It's crazy. Are we going to have school? Are we going to have graduation? Are we going to have a job? Are we going to have blah, blah, blah? And my question to you is, do you believe in the Son of Man? Okay, do you believe in the Son of Man? So I believe he worshiped him, and Jesus said, for judgment I came into this world. And that sounds very scary, and it should be. And it sounds also contradictory to John chapter 3, because Jesus said, right after John 3:16, he said, Son of Man did not come to condemn the world, but to save the world. Wait a minute. Isn't that opposite of what it says here? Jesus came into this world with an intention of seeking and saving the lost. Absolutely. If his objective was to judge the people, he didn't even have to come. He could sit on his throne and he could easily judge the people. But he came to seek and save the lost because without him coming, he cannot die for you. He came so that he may die, so that you may live. So he came to save. So what does this mean then? He came to save, and you need to believe in him, but you don't. You respond and you reject. You suppress the truth. So what are you doing? By your own default, you are putting judgment upon yourself. John Piper. Oh, don't I have that? Oh, right here. Piper says, when he says, for judgment I came into this world, he means that inevitably, as I save people by truth and love and righteousness, a division happens. You respond or you don't respond. Division clearly happens. You either submit to him as a Lord or you don't. Clear division happens, right? A division happens, rebellion happens, and people are confirmed in their belief and standing condemned. That's what he means. So it's sort of like an indirect effect of him sharing the truth to you. And I hope this makes sense. Okay. So what is this John chapter 9 is about? John chapter 9 is a sign. It's a sign of a man who experienced saving grace. If you stop at verse 34, nothing happened. 35 through 41 is the closure. He began the good work, and he finishes the good work. But the good thing that we could trust is that if he has begun in you, he's going to finish it. He doesn't leave you alone. The faith, he prepares your heart. You want to get up. You want to go to the Siloam. You want to say things. You want to know him. You may experience persecution, which Bible says you will if you become a Christian. You may experience it, but Jesus comes along and he opens your eyes and he completes it. We see clearly twice in this story, Jesus, God, initiating his move. Christianity always begins with him. Aren't you glad? Because we don't seek him. You don't seek him. You don't even want to hear. You just want to continue in your sin. In your own little world. You don't want to let go. But God comes and opens your eyes. And we need to respond in faith. Isn't that what we see? It's like a little seed and sprout and just grows and then bring into fruition birth and germination. Birth, new birth. Has it happened to you? Okay. We see the faith of the man just coming to a final closure and fruition. Do you believe? He shows up and he asks this pivotal question. And I ask you to answer to the Lord right now, all of you. Do you believe in the Son of Man? It doesn't matter whether you're a pastor. It doesn't matter whether you're an elder. It doesn't matter whether you're a worship leader. It doesn't matter whether you're a man or woman. Would you ask, would you answer that question to the Lord? Do you believe in the Son of Man? You don't have to answer to me. This is the saving faith, saving work of our Lord who came to seek and save what was lost. He begins and he finishes. He's going to finish it, people. He's going to finish it. All to Jesus. Have you, all to Jesus I surrender. Would you look at me? Don't turn your face away from me right now. Have you, all to Jesus I surrender to him. All to Jesus I surrender. Have you? Lord, I believe I worship you. It may sound, you know, too much, but that's what Christianity is. Can I now ask you, what do you suppose to see when your eyes are opened? You know, I've been asking this question, and I want to answer, in summary, is what I believe you really see when your eyes are truly open, if your eyes were open. I think two things. Number one, you see sin. Number two, you see Son. Sin and the Son. Do you believe in the Son of Man who came so that he may go to the cross for you? Without it, you have no chance. And how do you make that kind of case? How do you relate that with sin? Right here in today's text. Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things and said to him, "Are we also blind?" So we're talking about seeing and not seeing. And then Jesus says this stunning word. Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, just like that poor beggar, you will have no sin, no guilt. But if you say that you see through your religion, through your work, through your convincing yourself, your guilt remains, your sin remains." It's a pretty stunning word, isn't it? Pretty stunning word. When your eyes are opened, you see sin and you see the Son. I think those are the two key things in Christianity. You see the sin, which is scarier than coronavirus. You know, I've been meditating on this. I'm cautiously say this. I really do. Coronavirus, we will overcome. Lord will grace us. We'll have some difficulties, but we will overcome. We may develop vaccine, but sin, there is no such thing. There is no vaccine. We will not overcome it. That's why God came to us. I really pray, people, you took faith to come and worship today. And I pray that you will not brush it off anymore, any longer. And pray that the Spirit of God will just kind of stir faith in you, preparing your heart for the closure. Lord, all to Jesus I surrender. I believe, and I want to worship you. Brothers and sisters, come to Christ and bring it home. Okay? Bring it home. Aren't you tired of just kind of like hiding? Come to Christ. Let's pray.